Hello, I'm Ian McIntosh, and I don't know if you've heard, but we've just made a new podcast. It's called Galazzo, the totally Italian football show, and we wanted to wave it in front of you and see what you thought. So have a listen, let us know what you think, and if you like it, you can subscribe. Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. It's available wherever you found this one. Take it away, Jimbo.
Oh yeah, there we go. Feeling that. Galazzo, everybody. It's the brand new place to hang out and talk about very old football and some of the new stuff. Today, in a heady mix of classic flavours and some new scoops, we're going to both look forward and look back. And Inter Roma won this weekend, won like it's 1999. Welcome back to you, by the way, if you've not been following Italian football too much. Hopefully you're going to find this a nice easy primer for some of the great matches that are coming up between now and the end of the season. Anyway, hello to you, James Horncastle.
Hey, Jimbo.
Buongiorno, dottore. Gabriele Marcotti.
Very good to be with you, James.
Oh, that's so nice. Let's have a quick check on the news, James, before we launch into any kind of analysis of what might be happening this weekend. What's, though, in the papers? That's my paper, everyone. Let's see. Ooh, transfer news. Corriere dello Sport, Verdi, El del Napoli. This is Simone Verdi, no relation to Jamie Verdi, of course, but he's been the story of the January transfer window so far, the revelation of Bologna. He's going to be picked up by league leaders Napoli, reports Corriere, for €20 million plus bonus, or maybe that's going to rise, except, as is often the case with Verdi, the fat lady hadn't quite sung. And it turns out, just after Corriere printed this, that he's decided he's going to stay with Bologna instead. He prefers to pass to Bolognese, I think, players.
Well, and in fact, Verdi composed...
Yes.
He composed a letter to the fans on social media...
Exactly.
...explaining why he was staying in Bologna.
Nothing against Napoli and Neapolitans, but in a game that it was without bandiere, loyal symbols of a club, I thought it was important to stay and grow here at Bologna. Otherwise... it would be disrespectful. Can't imagine Alexis Sanchez writing that letter to the fans at the Emirates. In other big news, what's this we got here? Italy manager, the hunt continues. Not the one with the crowd with pitchforks and stuff and Giampiero Ventura. The one for a new manager. Roberto Mancini, I see, refuses to rule himself out. But again, in the Corriere dello Sport, news of two more big candidates, Allegri and Ancelotti. Londra li chiama clamorosa premier, London calling for these two men. Chelsea are apparently looking for Allegri to be their dopo Conte, their post-Conte. And as for Ancelotti, Arsenal are ready with a mega offerta. Also this week, if you've wondered how Silvio Berlusconi came to get €740 million for Milan and get paid for it not once but twice, kind of, you're in good company. Apparently, Milanese branch of the financial police have raised an Ancelotti-esque eyebrow as well, said to be investigating whether the whole thing was just a way of importing inflated figures from overseas. A bit like when they brought in Fat Ronaldo, you might feel. No, more of a money laundering thing, that the inflated figure was to cover up the entry into Italy of significant funds for Silvio Berlusconi. Silvio himself denies it. He says, every time I'm in an election, they invent this stuff. Well, lots of other stories out there. We could talk about VAR, but I'd rather talk about Serie A, which returns this weekend. You know, of course, how tight the situation is. Napoli on 51 points, Juventus. How many titles have they won in a row? Six?
That's right, Jimbo.
They're 1 point behind at the moment. 8 points behind them is the team in third, which is Inter. Lazio are on 40, then Roma on 39. Roma are visiting Inter this weekend and can pull level with the Nerazzurri. Down at the bottom end, I know you want to know that Benevento are 8 points now from safety.
Is it right that if the season began a month ago, Benevento would be in, like, the Europa League spot?
Is that right?
Yeah. Something like that?
I mean, they've got more points than Roma over the festive period. Inter, incidentally, the only team with the worst record during those five games that we saw played between December 6th and January 6th.
Crotone?
Chievo.
Oh, Chievo.
Yeah.
Right.
So both have fallen away a bit.
Boy, haven't they? All sorts of games coming up on Sunday. There's like four games in a row. Amongst those games, you've got Napoli going to Atalanta, which is going to be huge. Napoli, I've just mentioned it, top of the league. Atalanta, the story of the revelations once again this year, who of course beat Napoli in the Coppa Italia quarterfinals. That's going to be huge. It's 11:30 on Sunday. But I guess the premier fixture this weekend is the one on Sunday night, which is Inter Roma. Inter Roma, which finished 3-1 to Inter down at the Stadio Olimpico in August, a scoreline which did not reflect, I don't think, the way that match went. How are you looking forward to this game, James?
Well, it's huge for both of them because, you know, as Gazzetta said earlier in the week, you know, we can see Napoli and Juventus have got first and second place wrapped up. You've now got three teams vying for just two places, and you know, it's like musical chairs. You know, one of them is going to be left standing at the end of the season. And on the basis of what we've seen in December, Lazio seem to be have more momentum behind them, seem to be a more complete team. They get goals from all different angles. They've not only got Immobile, who's the top scorer in the league at the moment with 20 in 18 games, but goals from Milinkovic, goals from Alberto. Whereas Roma and Inter are now struggling, even though they've got, in Inter's case, Icardi, and Roma's case, Dzeko. Goals aren't coming that easy for them.
Mm-hmm. Is it going to be a good game, this one, do you think, Gabriele? Inter-Roma, Sunday night?
I don't see how it can be anything but a good game with the backstory of Spalletti going back against his old players. You've got the Nainggolan situation, which, I mean, that was extraordinary for those who don't know. And please fill in the blanks for me, James, if I forget something. But, you know, New Year's Eve, the guy can't resist the joys of filming yourself, you know, like, oh, I'm so drunk on television, so on. There's other issues. There's crazy stories linking him to China. And I mean, for me, this is, Nainggolan is arguably Roma's best player. And really, in some ways, more important player, because in this 4-3-3, if you're looking for the guy who can sort of be the pendulum between midfield and attack and support Dzeko, it's him. You know, it's not going to be De Rossi or Strootman legging it up the pitch.
Look, at the end of the day, he's had a number of disciplinary issues over the years.
Right.
I think if you talk to scouts who've looked at him in detail in this country,
uh-huh,
they're prepared to overlook the fact that he likes to smoke, that he likes to go out and party,
mm-hmm,
because he starts every game and he finishes every game. And you know, whatever he does outside the training ground doesn't matter as long as he gives 110% at the training ground and then on a match day. But you know, it gives them some pause for thought. I think the thing with Nainggolan, particularly when Conte first got the Chelsea job, and they apparently met in a hotel in Rome, was that Nainggolan, a little bit like Icardi with Inter, is quite unusual in that he loves the lifestyle of where he's at. He loves living in Rome. Yeah, his wife's Italian, Sardinian. They've made their house there, just as Icardi's done the same in Milan.
Mm.
And you know, he's happy to be the guy at Roma. But it's just now whether Roma are getting a little bit fed up with him. Personally, I agree with Gab. I think he's their best player by some distance. And you know, if they're serious about contending and being regularly in the Champions League, which again is what this game's about, they have to keep players like that.
Inter Roma, then. So many great games, James, over the years. So many great goals as well.
Yeah, that great Totti chip at San Siro.
At San Siro. We thought then, for our little wobbly screen bit where we go back in time, that we'd select a great clash between the Giallorossi and the Nerazzurri from way back in 1999. Sweet sounds of Liotto 8-3 there, which was rocking the nation back in 1999, although technically that record was released a year before. But, you know, people were still listening to it.
Still are.
Still are. Yeah. Gli anni. The years. And that's what we're going back through, delving through, back to a time when SpongeBob had just been released, Phantom Menace was hitting the cinemas, and at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome, Roma were taking on an Inter side. An Inter side that features a lineup of talent, Gabriele, that blows the mind. Players like
Michael Silvestre.
Bingo. He's not the only one. Taribo West, he was there. Amazing. A little bit of backstory, because this match was extraordinary. And looking back at it, there's loads of stuff that I've forgotten. Like the fact that I think that, you know, the Inter manager was
Roy Hodgson.
Yeah, he was their fourth manager, I think, of the season.
This was his first game back after losing that UEFA Cup final, what, a couple of years before against Schalke, when he was the only person ever to piss off Javier Zanetti.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Much as I love Uncle Roy and appreciate we all change, and it was 20 years ago, but that's kind of like the equivalent of going and like squashing a puppy on purpose, right?
So anyway, it's the 98-99 season, and they'd won the UEFA Cup the season before, 3-0 over Lazio, finishing second. Gigi Simeone, the manager, was named manager of the year. He got the Panchina d'Oro, the golden bench. And on that same day, at the start of this season, he got fired by Inter, who began an extraordinary campaign in which they then brought in Mircea Lucescu for a few games and kicked him out. And then Luciano Castellini was kind of the interim bloke. And Hodgson comes in just in time for this clash here with Roma on early May. I think it was the 3rd of May.
Same day that Oliver Reed died.
You're kidding, was it?
So they had to finish Gladiator with, you know, what at the time was state-of-the-art CGI.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. It's 7 days in. He takes this Inter side to Roma for a clash with Zdeněk Zeman's side. So you knew we were going to have fun. Inter had really struggled on the road, but Hodgson had worked miracles, in the words of the Corriere della Sera, in just 7 days. And within 22 minutes, they were ahead, 2-0 up. Ronaldo, scored after 17 minutes breakaway, catching hold of an assist from Roberto Baggio. He could play a little. And indeed, he then set up another Inter attacker, Zamorano. So now, Inter 2-0 up, they've got Ronaldo, Zamorano, Baggio doing their thing. Roma pull one back from a Totti penalty. But then Zamorano lobs.
My console, that's right, yes.
So now it's 3-1, and Roma are back in it. And indeed, second half starts, and within 2 minutes, Roma pull back a couple of goals to make it 3-3. Paolo Sergio and Marco Del Vecchio.
Marco Del Vecchio! 3-3!
Yeah, and the great thing is that at this stage, Roy Hodgson thinks I need to make this team a little bit more defensive, so he brings on Yuri Djorkaeff.
Wow. And Zamorano then makes it 4-3. Di Francesco, of course, is now the Roma manager, makes it 4-4.
Di Francesco Eusebio! Di Francesco! 4-4!
And then what happened?
Well, it could have gone either way, Jimbo, because Francesco Totti floated this sublime pass to, I think it was Marco Del Vecchio, who slid in a little bit like Gazza did against Germany in Euro 96 semi-final. Didn't reach the ball. Inter go up the other end. Another Baggio free kick. Simeone rides into it.
Yeah.
Gets the win.
Diego Pablo Simeone, 5-4.
It's like you took a kind of all-star 90s lineup and put them in Inter shirts for the evening. Despite this incredible lineup, did Inter ever go on and win anything? Did that Inter win anything more?
Well, the great thing about that Inter side, because it is the Pate Inter, so they're the crazy Inter. They basically beat Roma 5-4. They need to win the remaining games to qualify for Europe. They beat Bologna on the final day comfortably. They win 3-1. And then they have a UEFA Cup playoff with Bologna because they ended up finishing eighth and they lose both games.
Wow.
I suppose that does go to show either the strength and depth of Serie A at that time, which was probably the most competitive league we've ever seen, or just the general ineptitude that there was at Inter as well. So, there you go.
I was thinking back. Was this like Baggio's only good game in an Inter shirt?
He had some remarkable... When Lippi was there, he had a brilliant preseason, I remember, when he was linking up with Pirlo.
That was the following season, because Lippi was already in the stands. He'd already taken the job, and Roy was just looking after things for him. So at that time, they were, for example, talking about signing Thuram, Seedorf, Davids as well, just because they didn't have enough talent already. Rakoba was on loan at Venezia at this time.
That was the season of the Rakoba-Maniero connection,
yeah, that was
wasn't
amazing.
It? Yeah. He had like 7 assists, and they were all the same. All that he cut it with his left foot, like 40 yards across the pitch. And
so Venezia were doing a Benevento back then. In December, they looked completely lost. They looked like their heads were not going to be above water any longer. And they bring in Rakoba on loan from Inter. Pippo Maniero, who was kind of like, can I say, a poor man's Eric Cantona, he definitely was looking for that. He used to wear his shirt collars up and everything. And they just had an extraordinary partnership.
Their owner at the time was Maurizio Zamperini, who, because Moratti had gone through 4 managers, said that Moratti had lost his mind.
Right.
But clearly, I mean, surely from Zamperini's point of view, that was entirely normal.
Zamperini, who's a legend, I think, possibly the greatest manager allenatore in Italy, still at it, of course, still in charge of Palermo?
Yes, in fact, he sold the team to this mysterious interloper who was... this guy with all the tattoos who was on a TV show called Le Iene, which people might be familiar with. And then it turns out, hey, look, he doesn't have any money. So then he fired him too.
Yeah, that seems to happen a lot in Serie A.
Funny that.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Well, I remember being there that night and it was, does that stand out as one of the great games of all time in Serie A for you, Gab?
It certainly was one of the up and down games. And I think what made it stand out is from what I remember, and again, everything's more rose tinted. It's not that I don't like high-scoring games. I just don't like bad defending, right? So I got very angry this past weekend when Liverpool conceded those two late goals. But sometimes you get high-scoring games where both teams play really, really well. Mm. And you get really high-quality finishes. And I thought this game was that. You know, if you go back, and through the magic of YouTube, we can all do this. Mm. And you look at the goals that were scored... Yeah, there's always things that defenders could do better, but there's not going to be too many obvious errors. Or, I mean, am I forgetting one?
No, I mean, in that game, the finishing was outstanding. And, you know, I mean, you just have to do what you did earlier, which is just reel off the names there.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned people like Beppe Bergami was involved, Gianluca Pagliuca, Aldair, legend, Pluto. Roma, of course, that was to be the last season under Zdeněk Zeman. A certain Fabio Capello with a slightly different footballing mentality was waiting in the wings to begin what was a championship-winning era.
Yeah, third and last Scudetto.
Yeah, for now.
But, Zeman forced out the game, really, because of the allegations that he made, which led to a doping trial. I think his next job was, you know, at the very extremities of Europe, if you can call it that. He was at Fenerbahce. Yeah, he was cast out by the Palazzo for calling, casting suspicion on the physical condition of some of the Juventus players at that time.
Right. He very much came back in, of course, after Juventus had a slight period of realignment and is in charge of Pescara at the moment, where he's still Zemaning.
Yeah, he's still playing that brand of football that, you know, when it works, is fantastic to watch. What was interesting about that, about sort of Capello's arrival at that stage, was you had Franco Baldini, who at the time was Roma's director of football. And Capello was coming off a season where, you know, he went to Madrid, he won the title, and then he comes back to Milan and figures everything's fantastic now. Like, look, Capello's back, the guy who, you know, delivered those three titles, and everything goes pear-shaped. So then he kind of like retires to television, and he becomes what a lot of people feel was sort of Italy's greatest ever sort of pundit co-commentator.
You know, really?
The Gary Neville of his time, if you will.
Well, the Klopp of Italy, yeah?
Yes, sorry, that's a better... For our many German listeners, they might relate to that better, yeah. I think the way Baldini sold Capello on coming to Rome, and remember, Rome at the time... You know, you had an owner, the Sensi family, who had a ton of money, but a ton of debt, too. And, you know, you had Franco Sensi was getting older. He just wanted to win a title before he sort of moved on. And they sold him on this idea, like, you know, we're going to just knock Serie A upside down, right? After years of Juventus and Milan and Juventus, you're going to deliver a title for Roma, and you will make history as the guy who subverted the national order. And obviously that appealed... to his ego. But there's a great story. So the first season, I think they finished, what, sixth, something like that? The second season, right, they sit around, and this to me is this like sort of vintage Capello, because they're like, all right, we have Montella as a center forward, that's fine, but he's little and it's all about movement. Like, you know, I need guaranteed 25 goals a season. You know, who's the best guy in the world right now? Like, well, it's Battistuta, but obviously we can't get him. Like, Well, why not? Because there's no way, you know, he'd cost a fortune, and there's no way the club would agree to that. So Capello and Baldini decide to go out to dinner with the editor in chief of the paper in Rome, Corriere dello Sport, and they sort of hatch a plan. They say, "Listen, you tomorrow put big headlines and just make sure you put not Roma, but put like Franco Sensi, the Roma president, like buys Battistuta, right? And just write a story off that. And you're like, well, is it true? It's like, no, it's not true. Not yet, anyway. Let's see what happens. And so they go out and they do that. And the minute sort of the first editions hit the newsstands in the middle of the night, all of a sudden the whole city wakes up. You know, the next morning there's like people taking their kids to school, detouring and like stopping by the newsagents and looking at the paper. And Franco Sensi is sort of woken by cheering outside his house where fans have congregated and they're singing his name. And he's like, what's going on? And at that point, like, they just push so many buttons on him. And he says, like, well, he couldn't go back and say, well, no, actually, I'm not doing this. It's all nonsense. And to me, you know, sometimes with owners, especially back then in the pre-financial fair play age, you know, you could go and stroke somebody's ego to the point where he'd do something absolutely, you know, illogical and insane, yeah, and go sign a, what was he, 30 at the time for that absurd amount of money.
For one and, good season.
Yeah. And go and rub up, you know, another set of fans the other way, to the extent that Fiorentina fans would melt down the statue that they erected to Battistuta.
And I should point out, too, the editor of that Roman newspaper at the time, Corriere dello Sport, Mario Sconcerti, my old boss, happens to also be from Florence, be a big Fiorentina fan, and a guy who, a year after that, would go on to become chief executive of Fiorentina, which, well, you know, just to complete the circle.
Extraordinary, huh? So where is everybody now? Zeman, as I say, is now in charge of Pescara. Gigi Simeone, the man who was fired by Inter at the start of that season on the day that he won the Manager of the Year award, is still managing. Did you know that? I wasn't aware of this. He's with Gubbio. He's going to be 79 next week. Wow.
And then you've got Damiano Tommasi, who's running to be president of the Italian Football Federation at the moment.
Who was in that Roma side. Eusebio Di Francesco, who scored one of the goals, now manager of Roma. And the Inter manager back then, Roy Hodgson, who disappeared entirely from football, never to be seen again. That match he recognised a pinnacle of his career, unlikely ever to be equaled, so he just dropped the mic and left the stage.
My name, as if you didn't know, is James Horncastle, and although I keep my hair long, I like to keep my beard short. And when it comes to shaving, I insist on Cornerstone. Cornerstone takes all the hassle out of shaving. You'll never run out of blades again. Just let them know how often you shave and they'll take care of the rest. Get £10 off your first order and find out more about your perfect shave box at cornerstone.co.uk/totally.
Right, it was a great era, that, of kind of lunatic cavaliers, gentleman owners almost, who would plough their personal fortune. I think Moratti would be the ultimate example of that. There's probably no one who ploughed more of their own personal fortune into a club more than him, is there? Isn't the story with Moratti that the rest of his family recognised that he wasn't quite the sharpest tool?
They didn't want him. Yeah,
they said, he can't be involved with our oil business, Saras.
Stay away from the refineries.
Stay away from the refineries. Give him the football club. He can take care of that.
Here's some toys and you go do that. No. I think, if I can turn serious for a moment.
Yeah.
That was sort of the height of that era.
Yeah.
And if you look at it, it did a tremendous amount of damage to the Italian game, to what happened afterwards, because there was still the time when people sort of refused to think that, you know, you could run football like a business and be successful. And so it was just a question of lobbying, putting pressure on the egos of owners to throw money in. You know, it's a little bit like people who own polo teams. I'm sure you know many. And it really stopped Italian football from, you know, it really kind of froze us in time where it stopped us from becoming like a normal industry.
Mm.
And that's why we were, you know, we're only just now over the last couple of years, I think, catching up.
I miss those days. I got to say, when you had people like Moratti, Sensi, Luciano Gauci at Perugia.
Cecchi Gori
on the banks of the Arno. Yeah, we should definitely... if there's something in particular, listeners, you would like us to discuss, then do let us know. But we should definitely come back and do a thing on the great Serie A owners of the past. It was lovely speaking to you, Gabriele, about that.
Yes.
A little trip back in time. Brings up loads of memories. Recoba, that's another one. Remember his debut on the day that Princess Diana died.
Yeah.
Didn't he also score like a 97th minute free kick in his last ever game for
Recoba?
Whatever
it was recently, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, he also debuted, you remember, the amazing brace. That was Ronaldo's debut as well. Yeah.
Upstaged him.
And this, as I say, was the day that Diana had died, and we were doing the game live on Channel 4, and the Channel 4 executives were kind of calling through to the stadium and saying, is the game going ahead? And the Italians were a little bit nonplussed, you know, with all due respect, by this question. Yeah, we were intending to still play our football match. But their expressions of alarm when then the Brescia team came out fielding a player whose name was Diana. And that poor old Peter Brackley having to handle that on commentary duties. Not the best.
I'm Odiana,
yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Anyway, so many great stories. This has been just one of them. Do hope you've enjoyed, Golad. So it's been lovely to have you here, as I say, Gabriele, and you, James Horncastle, and you, listener. We'll catch up with you again soon. But in the meantime, do rate us and review us, share and subscribe. Send us a tweet at The Totally Football Show. Find us on Facebook, also at The Totally Football Show. But for now, from all of us here, it's arrivederci.
You've been listening to Golazzo, The Totally Italian Football Show. It's a Muddy Knees Media production, and for sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And make sure you check out our other podcasts, The Totally Football Show and The Totally Football League Show.